This is Audible.
Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Tender with a Twist by Annabeth Albert, narrated by Mark Bachman and Iggy Toma. 1. Logan. The crazy woodcarver was shirtless. Again. It was a sleepy Thursday in January on the Oregon coast, which meant most sane people were in flannel and jackets and bundled for the sharp bite of the wind. I was wearing fleece-lined bike pants and a long-sleeved cycling jacket as I celebrated the first good ride of the year, and I was still chilly when I stopped my ride near the jewelry store on 101, the main highway running through Rainbow Cove. I told myself that I'd stopped for some water from my bottle, but I knew it was a weak excuse. Really, I'd been transfixed by the sight of Curtis Hunt carving up a giant tree trunk with his chainsaw. For all that rumors flew about his eccentricity, the man was an unparalleled artist, and watching him do his thing was a true pleasure. Sweat dripped from his head and back, despite the cool temperature, and he worked like a man possessed, moving this way and that around the piece, dancing almost as his chainsaw flitted about with the sort of grace I'd expect from the jeweler, not this buff lumberjack with heavy machinery. He wore sawdust-splattered jeans, heavy boots, safety goggles, and ear protectors, but his red flannel shirt lay discarded on a nearby sculpture of a falcon. Even from a distance, his shimmering muscles and tats were impressive. The guy had probably 15 years on me, but he was in amazing shape. Hell, if I had ink and muscles like that, I wouldn't keep my shirt on either. The sight of him made something warm unfurl in my gut. But I dismissed the low thrum of arousal as a never-happening-in-this-lifetime thing. Chances were very high that he'd laugh at any of my fantasies, especially the ones involving him, some rope, and his usual intense stare replaced with something closer to supplication. But a guy could still look. And want. So I took my time drinking my water, watching as the outline of a bird slowly emerged from the raw tree trunk. In a town as tiny as Rainbow Cove, the rumor mill worked overtime, and I knew all the rumors about Curtis. Knew he'd lost his longtime lover a year or two ago, and that the two of them had been mythic fixtures in the area. Curtis had apparently gotten more eccentric since the other guy had passed, moving into the old gas station he used as a gallery for his carvings, growing his own food, and acting notoriously cranky about progress. And progress was what had driven me to Rainbow Cove. Progress was what my restaurant represented, hope that the area economy could find a new foothold in tourism. So it wasn't surprising that Curtis didn't seem to like my friends and me. Probably wouldn't appreciate me looking at him like he was a lumbersexual tumbler, all queued up for my viewing pleasure. But damn! Those muscles! I gave myself one last look before I pedaled away, heading away from the center of town, taking the turnoff that would lead me to the narrow residential road that skirted the beach to the south. I was alone on the road. Glorious, vast gray skies and sprawling blue ocean, my only companions. This was another thing I'd come to Rainbow Cove for. The space to be alone. The quietness that I'd only ever found before in a dojo. Portland was crowded, and not just with people. My parents' expectations always loomed large, as did past mistakes and hurts, and the general hustle of the area made it hard to catch my breath, hard to think and breathe and simply be. The traffic, the noise, the demands. All of it had gotten to be too much for me, And when my friend Mason had proposed the idea of the bar and grill here on the coast, I'd leapt at the chance to start fresh. I'd loved the coast since I'd been a kid. Some of my earliest memories were of happy family weekends spent around here. Eventually, my ride returned me to the tavern. After locking up my bike, I headed into the kitchen. Mason was signing off on a meat delivery from a local farm.
Chef.
The driver greeted me with a wave.
We've got some new fillets in. Think you might want some for a special this week?
I might, I said, taking off my gear and stashing it. My mind immediately flitted away from the shirtless woodcarver and back to my real passion, cooking. I loved being the chef here, the guy who made the decisions and the specials. I'd had years of sous chef positions in Portland, growing ever more eager for my own menu, one where I could play with sauces and presentation and choose my own local ingredients. I inspected packages Mason was loading into the freezer and fridge. We'd do most of our business with the endless stacks of burger patties, but I loved changing things up with my daily specials, too. I eyed the fillets the driver had on his cart.
They look good.
I'm picturing a peppercorn-crusted fillet with a red wine reduction.
Don't know if anyone will pay fillet prices.
Mason shook his head. The slow winter season was starting to wear on my friend, who also served as our business manager.
You can try it as a special, but let's not overorder.
I reluctantly took just a small order of fillets, ceding to Mason's wishes. I'd round out my weekly specials plan with cheaper options like shepherd's pie.
How was your ride?
Mason asked after the delivery guy was on his way.
Fine.
I didn't feel the need to report perving on the woodcarver. It had been a little personal indulgence, not to mention the fact that Mason's police chief boyfriend, Nash Flint, was close friends with Curtis, which meant I'd be in for double the teasing if I let on that I'd let my eyes wander in that direction.
You're not too lonely, are you?
Mason pressed.
It's your first winter on the coast, and I know that can be hard.
Not lonely, I said truthfully. I was so happy to be free of all the voices of Portland, my well-meaning parents, my ex, my Aikido master, my many opinionated friends, the executive chefs and restaurant managers who hadn't seen fit to promote me. The silence of the off-season meant that for the first time in my life, I was finally free to figure out my own direction. And I intended to seize that. I wasn't telling Mason, but that was my New Year's resolution. Be the person I'd been reluctant to embrace in Portland. It was high time I took a chance on myself.
Curtis. I brushed a stray piece of sawdust off my knee right before Bill said hello to my corn. I'd been carving too close to dinner again. Ready the restraints, I'm coming for dinner Friday. I forced my voice into happy mode for Bill. I was sitting in the parking lot of the Rainbow Tavern on a Saturday that felt more like a Monday, and I needed to set up a date before I had to go inside to eat a dinner I was dreading. Curtis, nice to hear from you. But this Friday, did we have plans? Bill sounded more distracted than usual. He was an old friend, and I'd watched him evolve from a long-haired biker into a refined, if often overscheduled, college professor. It's the third Friday of the month. We seemed to have fallen into a routine. A routine that I desperately, desperately needed. Ah, well, I guess I needed to talk to you about that. Tom and I have big news. The adoption agency came through. We're picking them up on Thursday. Siblings, a boy and a girl, 2 and 4. We're just over the moon. This was where I needed to say congrats. Bill and Tom had been waiting for a foster-adopt situation to materialize for the better part of a year. I needed to not be petty or disappointed. A happy guy, a genuinely happy one, would say the right things about hearing this news. But what popped out was, "So no kink this Friday?" Bill sighed like he hadn't expected more from me. No kink for a while. Tom and I talked. We're going to focus on the family for the next few months. Take a break from the scene. We'll reevaluate then whether we want to get back into it. Take a break? You? You won Mr. Leather the year you finished your dissertation. I've never known you to take time away. Things have changed. Bill's voice was gentler now. I'm not a spring chicken anymore. The scene gets tiring after a time, don't you think? Yes, yes, I did think. That was exactly why I loved my arrangement with Bill. No strings, no feelings, no wasting time in a bar or meetup. No ridiculous swiping this way or that on whatever the latest app was. You seemed to like it plenty a few weeks ago. I'm sorry. I should have called you right after Tom and I talked. To be honest, I didn't think you'd care. Bill was drumming something against his desk, a pen maybe, and the click, click, click drove me as nuts as his patronizing tone. I don't. It's great for you guys. I forced the words out. I didn't want him to think I was emotional or something. Not about the end of what had basically been a mutually convenient business arrangement. Troy would be thrilled, too. You let me know if you need anything for the kids. You register somewhere. We're all set, but we're asking friends to send favorite children's books if they want. And Curtis, we miss him, too. A lot. But maybe it's time you think about finding someone. Someone for you. I didn't have a favorite children's book, and I didn't need someone. I'd had someone. Troy. He'd been more than enough for this lifetime. And as much as I appreciated Bill's longtime friendship, I'd had enough of his condescending tone. You guys take care. I'm meeting up with Nash, so I better go. Nash Flint? Troy's old high school friend? Heard he came out a few months back. Yep. Got himself a man and everything, because it wasn't enough to have Bill and Tom among the flock of ridiculously happy friends in my life. I had Nash, who had gone from stoic police chief to besotted boyfriend of Mason, the bar owner, and their little family now, too. And I was happy for them all, I was. They deserved to find family and love and all that jazz that had consistently avoided me other than my years with Troy. But I had to admit, it did make it more than a little challenging to be around them, what with jealousy stinging me like a cat-o'-nine-tails flogger. As I ended the call with Bill, I saw Nash's Jeep pull into the lot. You know I'm only eating with you out of pity. I made myself smile widely as I crossed the gravel lot to him. That man of yours abandoned you. Huh, Nash snorted. He's on an aquarium field trip with his niece Lilac's scout troop. He'll be back in the morning. But yes, thank you for saving me from the horrors of my own cooking. 3 hours one way with 20-odd little girls? Lordy, deliver me from such a thing. I mock shuddered as I followed him into the tavern. Did y'all have a nice holiday, though? Bet you spoiled her rotten. See? I did know the right things to say at the right time, hard as it was sometimes to make the words cooperate. And sure enough, Nash smiled broadly. We did. We shouldn't have, but we did. And he rattled on about dollhouses this and American Girl that for a good 5 minutes after we found our regular table by the window. Nash's man Mason co-owned this place with two friends. Do you want drinks? The server didn't look that much older than Mason's niece, some fresh-faced local girl the guys had hired to help. I supposed it was highly likely that Nash, Troy, and I had gone to school with her parents, because that's the age we were getting to be now, somewhere between 40 and death. I got a beer to help me with the nodding and listening to Nash's happy business. And Nash got a tea because he might get called out again for police stuff before the night was through. It was a slow Saturday night, so the server was back with our drinks quickly. Nash and I both got our usuals to eat, him a regular burger with a salad, and me a veggie burger with some sweet potato fries. "What's this?" I fingered the paper advertising tent on the side of the table between the ketchup and salt. "Leather night?"
"Something the guys are trying out. More people have been showing up to their pride nights, so they had the idea of adding in some theme nights. Maybe attract different people. You should tell those friends of yours and Eugene."
I growled at the mention of Bill, the pang of his rejection still fresh. "They're busy, having kids and all. Leaving that scene behind."
"Ah, well, that's too bad."
Nash and me, we were never ones to discuss our private bedroom activities, but he knew me well enough to have some sympathy shining in his eyes.
"Still, though, you and Troy had some contacts, right? I know Mason would appreciate you spreading the word."
"I'm not the kink welcome wagon.
You know, you could be more supportive of the guy's efforts to make Rainbow Cove a gay tourism destination. It would mean more business for you, too."
Nash chided before taking a sip of his tea. "Need I remind you that you weren't on board for their plan not that awfully long ago? And of course I want more business. We all do this time of year. The chilly, rainy, dank days of early January were never good for any of us dependent on the tourist trade. I'll put some feelers out. Happy?"
"Ecstatic."
Nash looked like he wanted to say more. But right then our server returned, without our food.
"I'm super sorry, but the chef says he thinks he's out of veggie burger patties. His special today is a veggie Reuben, and on the menu..."
"Sweetie, they're frozen little hockey pucks. I'm pretty sure he's got one somewhere in the deep freeze. This is what I always order. Always." I made a little scoot-scoot gesture with my hand because I was simply over not getting what I wanted tonight.
"Bobby, hon, could you ask Logan to double-check?"
Nash's tone was far nicer than mine.
"We'd appreciate it."
After she retreated, he turned a glare on me.
"You're gonna scare away the good help. Mason just got Bobby all trained. Chill. We'll find you something suitably grassy to eat."
"I like what I like." I wasn't in the mood to argue my dietary preferences.
"Yeah, well, I'm paying, so you can find some calm. And maybe tell me what's got you in such a funk lately. Usually you're the charming one and I'm the cranky one, but lately we've switched."
"Hate this time of year." I fiddled with a sugar packet. I wasn't going to tell him that him all happy and partnered up was a big part of it. Something I hadn't expected. "Nothing other than that. Short days, short temper. You know how it goes."
"I know the anniversary."
"Don't mention it." I waved away his concern like I didn't know exactly the second when Troy had died. Didn't know that the anniversary was this coming week. "I'm not that morbid. I don't calendar watch."
"I miss him too. Miss you. You always get so down in the winter. But it's worse now."
Concern marred Nash's handsome face. "Mason's got you all emotional now. Talking feelings and shit." I shook my head. A domesticated Nash Flint was indeed a sight to behold. "How about you tell me more about the holidays? What did Mason cook?" Nash sighed like the change of subject pained him, but he took the bait, telling me about rib roasts and eggnog cookies. I liked a world where Nash got his happy ending, where there was a little family like his, like the one Bill and Tom were forming, where there were holiday meals and presents and overflowing goodwill. I just didn't get to live in that world. I'd only ever been a tourist there with Troy anyway. No, I'd sip my beer and wait for my damn burger, and be glad the world at least smiled on my friends.
Logan.
The customer says you must have a veggie burger in the freezer. Bobby's timid voice sounded from behind me. I swore that the woman was going to make me burn myself one of these days, the way she liked to sneak up on me. I don't. I'm sorry. Did you offer him a veggie Reuben or the black bean soup?
He wasn't interested. He was mean.
Her voice trembled. She looked far younger than she was, but I knew she was 21 and had had a hard time finding a local job before Mason took her under his wing.
Police Chief Flint asked, too. Said you should double-check.
Oh, I knew exactly who we were dealing with now.
Curtis. The same crazy-ass chainsaw woodcarver artist I'd been ogling the other day when I shouldn't have. Temperamental as fuck. And despite my considerable efforts to expand our vegetarian offerings, the man only ordered one thing. Tell them there are none. We're sorry. I'll comp the veggie Reuben if he'll give it a try.
Don't make me tell them.
The quaver in her voice was matched with some serious shine to her eyes.
If we had tears, we were all going to be in trouble, and Mason wouldn't forgive me if we lost another server.
Is Adam back yet? With Mason chaperoning a field trip, we were short-staffed. Adam, Mason's best friend and fellow partner with us in the tavern, usually manned our bar and worked the dining room, but he was running a fast errand for his mother.
Not yet.
Bobby's face paled. Horatio, can you watch the grill? We've got fries due up. It was just me and one kitchen helper on duty.
Sure thing, boss.
Like Bobby, this was one of Horatio's first jobs, and while he was happy for the experience, he was also green as the Oregon moss that covered everything this time of year. I wasn't sure I trusted him not to burn the place down, but I didn't have a lot of options. I'd just finished plating two salads for the other customers in the place, so I handed them to Bobby.
You take these out.
I'll deal with Curtis and Flint. I ran a hand through my hair, though making it look presentable was probably hopeless. Working a kitchen was sweaty, messy business. Off duty, I took certain pains with my appearance, and it irked me a little that Curtis was going to see me all rumpled. Not that it should bother me. It wasn't like Curtis knew I'd been watching him the other day, or like I had any reason to care about his opinion of me. Heart beating faster than I'd like, I approached their table. Flint wore his out-of-uniform usual of a polo shirt and jeans, while Curtis worked his typical refugee-from-a-biker-gang vibe in an old Harley T-shirt that showed off his arm tats. Paint-stained jeans, wild brown hair, and a beard added more oomph to his rough image. Flint had a smile for me. Ever since he started living with Mason, he'd been way friendlier than he used to be. But Curtis merely scowled.
Par for the course with him.
The few times we'd spoken, he'd always been dismissive, like I was younger than Bobby and Horatio, and even less worthy of his time. And, for whatever reason, tonight, I wasn't going to take it. We're out of veggie burgers. They come from a local supplier in Eugene, and they had a fluke snowstorm this week and didn't make it out. Now, I'd like...
Do you have the fries? Just bring me some of them.
I'll eat those while Nash has his dinner. Something about the way Curtis sneered got to me, made me want to pin him to the wall with far more than a glare. Look, every day I make sure one of our specials is vegetarian. There are also a bunch of options on the regular menu. I can do a vegan pizza for you, even. Vegan grilled cheese if it was a sandwich you were after. Pick something and I'll comp it. I used a tone that I didn't trot out very often, a don't-argue-with-me sternness. I was an easygoing guy, but Curtis Hunt pressed all my buttons. Curtis and Flint both blinked at me. I doubted Flint had ever heard me get upset before, but too bad.
Suppose I could try grilled cheese, Curtis said at last. Can you add some of the sautéed onions you usually put on the burger? Or are you out of those, too?
Absolutely, I can add them. Maybe toss in some grilled peppers and a little...
Just the onions.
Curtis shook his head like I was all kinds of dumb. You'll like your sandwich. I kept the stern tone going, and you'll be nice to Bobby about it. You got a problem? You can ask for me.
Oh, I will.
Curtis's tone was somewhere between dry and mildly amused.
He'll like it,
Flint added. Good. I was about to return to the kitchen, but Flint spoke again.
While you're here, why don't you tell Curtis what all you guys have planned for Leather Night?
Oh, of course, Flint thought Curtis might be interested in that. Curtis was probably one of those guys who believed that some scowling and rude remarks made him a dom. He'd pull on some dusty motorcycle pants from his closet and undoubtedly assume he'd be laid before the night was done. And, sadly, he might not be wrong. He had the sort of dangerous vibe that always seemed to pull hookups in the leather bars in Portland, and, despite the limitations of his wardrobe, he wasn't a bad-looking guy. Arm muscles for days, lean frame, eyes so pale blue they were almost haunting in their intensity, and full lips that even the beard couldn't hide. We're starting after the usual dinner rush. 9 through midnight there will be specials on drinks and appetizers. We've got a DJ coming over from Eugene, and we've advertised in Eugene, Roseburg, Portland, Coos Bay, and some online leather communities. We're hoping for a decent turnout.
I hope you get it,
Flint said encouragingly. I know business has been slow. It's not just a publicity stunt. We're trying to reach all facets of the LGBTQ community.
Gotta get those tourist dollars.
Curtis's patronizing tone had me back to envisioning him pinned to a bed, held down until he was begging, maybe cuffed to it. That smirk wiped off his face and replaced with pleas for more. It would never happen, but man, the guy really needed to be taken down about 7 pegs. I'm going to make your food. As I headed to the kitchen, I gave him a final scathing look, one that probably wouldn't even register. If he'd decided I was an annoying kid, then an annoying kid I would remain. I knew his type all too well. Didn't matter how stern I got, I was always going to be a baby-faced weakling to guys like Curtis. And God help me, the bar was going to be filled with that type next week. Unfortunately, I had only myself to blame. I'd been the one to suggest doing a leather night. I still thought it was a good idea, even if it was likely to bring up every bad memory I had of trying the Portland leather scene. But I'd be stuck in the kitchen, far from the action in any event, which was what I wanted. Right? I whacked the ingredients for Curtis's order together far more forcefully than I needed to.
What did that sandwich do to you?
Adam came into the kitchen, finally back. Nothing. I couldn't keep the frustration out of my tone. Sorry that took longer than expected, but I got the part for Mom's furnace and installed it. Luckily, they weren't without heat too long. Yeah, that would suck. Does she have many visitors right now? Adam's mother ran a popular B&B on the edge of town. A few. Adam shrugged. Business is down for everyone. She says hi. Says she misses you and that you should come around for dinner sometime. I'll text her, see what's a good time. When I'd first come to town, I'd rented a room above Adam's mother's garage, but I'd recently taken over Mason's lease when he moved in with Nash. I'd wanted more privacy and a kitchen of my own, but I did get nostalgic for Adam's chatty mother's generous hospitality.
Did I miss anything good?
Flint is in with Curtis, and we're out of veggie burgers. I'm going to need you to take this order out in a second. They scared Bobby.
Oh, man. Out of the veggie burgers. Curtis must be in a snit.
Adam laughed. He is. And Flint was trying to sell him on Leather Night, but it's obvious he thinks it's a stupid idea.
He's just in a permanent bad mood. Don't let him get you down.
And him and Troy were really into that scene, from what I heard. Too bad Troy died in that accident. He would have made the perfect bouncer for the event. You've never seen a guy so big and scary. I'm talking Hagrid huge.
Seriously?
I'd heard about Curtis's dead lover before, but I'd always pictured some mild and meek man happily playing second fiddle to the force of Curtis's large personality.
Oh, yeah.
Adam watched as I plated Flint's burger and Curtis's sandwich.
He knew how to keep Curtis in line, too. Curtis wasn't always as cranky, and he got a lot more eccentric after Troy died. Moved into that old gas station he uses as a studio.
Did you know they had a place by the beach, and it sits empty now? He won't use it, but won't sell it either.
Not surprised.
I'd heard enough Curtis stories to not be shocked at anything he did.
Here you go. Get their food out.
He's probably going to complain, but don't take it personally. Adam smiled at me before scooping up the plates.
I won't.
I needed to remember that. Taking anything about Curtis personally would only be a recipe for a disaster, as would letting myself become curious about his relationship with Troy. If Troy had been some big dude keeping Curtis in line, where did that leave my assumptions about what Curtis was into? Nowhere. That's where. I could not go getting hung up on him. I needed to focus on helping the business through this slow patch, creating specials that drew in more traffic, surviving Leather Night, and making it through this long, dreary, coastal winter. Even caring about whether Curtis liked the sandwich was more than I should have done. But that didn't stop me from looking through the order window, glimpsing him biting into the sandwich. I knew it was the perfect ratio of almond cheese, sourdough bread, and sautéed onions, but still, the pleasure on his face was gratifying. And if I wondered what else could cause his eyes to darken like that, well, I seriously needed to get a grip. He wasn't my type, and I had a business to save.
2. Curtis. I wasn't going to Leather Night. Not even tempted. And the fact that the kid chef had made a decent sandwich didn't change that one bit. He proved to have some unexpected backbone, but it was a bit like watching a toy poodle bark down a Rottweiler. Funny, but ill-advised. With that baby face, he really should watch who he turned that temper on. Not everyone was as forgiving as me and Nash. And what was I doing thinking of him several days later while I was splitting wood for Janice? I'd brought her dog, Chopper, outside with me. And he was running back and forth trying to make friends with two squirrels who were having nothing to do with him. A big mutt who had to be going on 10 now. He still reminded me so much of the puppy he'd been when Troy had rescued him almost a decade prior. Give it up, boy. I tossed a stray stick for him. You don't need any stuck-up squirrels anyway. Guys like us, we're best on our own. I pulled my flannel off, stripping down to my white undershirt while waiting for him to return with the stick. Despite the lower temperatures, splitting wood was sweaty work, especially in the sort of quantities Janice needed for her wood stove. I'd done 2 cords for her back in October, but this had been an unusually cool winter, and she already needed to restock her wood pile. Chopper took her sweet time bringing the stick back, and I looked up from my work, making sure he hadn't gone too close to the road. Janice's property was a corner lot, and I was working in the side yard stacking the split wood in the rack she kept on the side of the house, near the kitchen door. The side yard wasn't fenced, something I wished she'd let me fix, but she'd thus far resisted my efforts. The street was deserted this time of morning, everyone either at work or school or sleeping off the night before. But wait. A guy on a bicycle lurked on the edge of the property, giving Chopper a pet on the head. Chop, you get over here now. He really did no better than to make friends with random strangers. I strode over. Janice lived alone, and even with Chopper around, I worried about her. But as I got closer,
I realized I did recognize the guy. It was the kid chef, looking all preppy in a silver helmet, close-fitting black and silver shirt, and the sort of biking pants that belonged in a pro bike race you might see on TV. Even then, I didn't really get the point of them. Wasn't like the snazzy tights were any barrier to road rash if you wiped out. "Can I help you?" I asked. "Oh, sorry. Didn't realize. The dog looked like he was going to run in the road, so I stopped to see where he belongs. Here." "I figured that out. Thanks." Just like the other night at the tavern, he wasn't cowed by my short tone, which was a surprise. With his build and face, I would have expected him to jump out of the way of my temper, but that wasn't the case. "I didn't know you did firewood. Is that a side thing for you?" His gaze swept over me, lingering a bit too long on my biceps. Well, two could play at that game. I gave him an appraising stare of my own. His get-up didn't hide any of his long, lean body. I'd seen him biking around town before, but never really stopped to take in his muscular thighs or flat abs. Too young. Too thin. But I could still make him uncomfortable, so I let my eyes zoom in on his full mouth. "See something you like, kid?" He didn't blush, but he did flinch. "Nope. And the name's Logan." "All right, Logan. I was trying to ask you about your business. You sell firewood? There's a wood stove at my rental, but I haven't tried to light it yet." "Don't. Not until you have someone check the chimney. Mason's old man has a wood stove, I'm pretty sure. Have Mason find you someone to check it over if he can't do it himself. Last thing we need is you burning the place down." I didn't volunteer to be the one doing the checking, but I was serious. Messing around with wood heat was serious business. And I might not care much for the kid, but I still didn't want him burnt like the charcoal sticks my mom had passed off as French fries. "And the wood? You sell that?" Why he was so fired up to give me business, I couldn't say. But I didn't much like it. Made the hairs on my arms prickle. Felt dangerously close to pity. "Nope. Do favors for a few friends here and there. Every now and then, a buddy will call me in for a big job." I made it clear from my tone that he was neither a friend nor a big job worth my time. "Oh." The way his face fell made me feel like when I stepped on Chopper's leg by accident. "Listen, you get that stove looked at and I'll tell my buddy you're in the market for wood. See what his price is running right now." I had no idea why I was volunteering to call Johnny on the kid's behalf when the grocery store, as well as several other places in town, all had firewood. Usually at a jacked-up cost, though. Johnny would give the kid a fair deal. "Thanks. I appreciate it." He kicked at the dirt near the front tire of his bike. Did you like the sandwich? The other night? It had been the best damn thing I'd eaten in a month, but I wasn't telling him that. It was okay. Fries were a little past done, though. I'm still working with Horatio on that. I'll talk to him. He nodded seriously, like I was one of those food critics doing a write-up on his joint. "I'm tinkering with the sandwich a little, slow-cooking the onions, adding thyme and garlic, using mozzarella or the vegan equivalent, putting it on a sourdough bun and calling it a French onion sub." That did sound tasty, but I merely said, "Sounds all right. You should come by. Try it. I'll probably have it on the menu by Leather Night." "We'll see." I only said that instead of an outright no because I knew Nash wanted me to give the tavern more business, and would probably drag me there at some point soon. Still wasn't going to Leather Night. "Well, think about it." He sounded as firm as he'd been when he'd told me to order the sandwich the other night. Surprising, really, that he could go that deep and commanding. Almost cute. Like a bear cub discovering he had claws. And despite myself, I nodded. He took off on the bike with a final wave,
and I watched him disappear down the road far longer than I should have.
Who was that?
Leaning on her cane, Janice made her way down the walk. Just a kid. The chef at the tavern. You know, that venture of Nash's new man.
I know.
She wasn't one to keep up on town gossip, or get out. This stroll down her walk was as far as she'd go all week. Tossing the ball for Chopper out back was a big expedition for her. Hey, you want a burger from there sometime? Nash says their beef is good. I could drop it by.
I get my beef from Swanigan's, half a steer. Same order for 30-odd years now.
She nodded sharply.
I've got a roast in the slow cooker now, but I don't suppose you'll have some.
No, ma'am. If ever there was someone in this life I'd eat meat for, Janice was it. And still, I had to keep back a shudder at the thought of roast. But did I smell cookies?
You did, Charmer.
She lightly boxed my shoulder. Years ago, she'd learned to bake a basic vegan oatmeal cookie with raisins. I didn't much care for raisins, but I looked forward to them nonetheless. She was as close as I got to family, and her taking a minute to bake them for me made my chest all warm and tight. Also, she was the last person left to find me charming, and I wasn't about to burst that opinion. So I followed her back into the small white cottage where she had it cloyingly warm as usual. This level of warm made me more than a little claustrophobic.
I saw on the TV about a new creamer made of coconuts. Added it to my order this week.
She pulled a small box from the fridge. The little grocery store in Rainbow Cove didn't do delivery as a regular thing, but they made an exception for Janice and a few others.
You want some for the coffee?
Sure. I usually drank my coffee sweet without the creamer. But I wasn't gonna let her purchase go to waste. I filled my mug from the coffee pot on her counter and added a healthy glob of the creamer. I'll have the wood done pretty soon. Should be out of your hair by noon or so, unless you got something else that needs doing.
The light bulb in the bathroom keeps flickering, but I don't want to keep you.
Not a problem. I'll take a look after I finish with the wood. You let me know if you think of anything else. I headed back outside, coffee in my thermal mug and Chopper at my heels. As I passed through the kitchen hallway, I tried hard not to look at the pictures on either side. There were pictures all over this damn house, in the bathroom even. Stairs head into the attic. No space was off limits to her collection. But there was one here in the hallway that I always tried not to see, and yet stopped at every time. Like so many of Janice's pictures, it was one she'd taken, back in the years when she got out of the house, bringing that camera of hers everywhere. This picture had a wooden frame shaped like the exterior of a log cabin, and the photo was of Troy and me, standing in front of the sold sign by our place. She'd been so proud of Troy. How he'd combed foreclosure listings for months, found just the right bargain, and put in the work after the sale to make it into a home. I'd helped, of course, but Troy had been the driving engine of that project. And Lord, but it hurt, seeing the big guy's smile in that picture. He was looking at me, not the camera, and his gaze was everything I'd carry with me until the grave. Tenderness, affection, warmth, pride. Just a hint of control. Because, yeah, that was him, too. It was this huge domestic moment. And he still was a total badass with a shit-eating grin that was all for me. Every damn time I passed that picture, my skin lost another layer. A new level of raw, exposed to the elements. I knew from experience that eventually, with enough hours of work, I'd toughen my skin. Get a callus built up for the next time grief stripped me bare.
Logan. Taste this. I carefully cut a sandwich into bite-sized chunks so we could all taste my latest creation. I'd slow-cooked the onions with vegan butter, thyme, and a little balsamic vinegar. The guys each took a piece and dutifully chewed.
Need steak, medium rare, sliced thin.
Adam took a second piece even as he complained.
Seriously, what's with all the veggie stuff?
It's popular. I tried not to sound too defensive, especially this time of year. Everyone always tries to be healthy in January, keep their New Year's resolutions.
What's yours?
Mason asked, probably trying to keep Adam and me from bickering about the merits of vegetarian menu items. I'd made my resolution last week about embracing my true self, but I sure as hell wasn't sharing something so corny with these two. So, instead, I shrugged and gave what I hoped was a wicked grin.
Eat more veggies.
Well, congrats, it's working. How about next year you resolve to add venison and elk to the menu?
Adam laughed and grabbed a third piece before I could move the plate away.
Maybe. You just want an excuse to go hunting.
Guilty.
Adam grinned. In addition to thinking himself God's gift to flannel, he was a major outdoors person. I didn't get giving up a perfectly good day off to go somewhere cold and dank and wait for the remote possibility of Bambi wandering by. Give me a nice long paved bike route any day. I'm going to do a variation on this one with fire-roasted peppers next week. Then, because this was how my brain worked, I wrapped my knuckles on my head.
Oh, fire! Just remembered. Mace, do you know someone who could come look at the wood stove in the rental?
I'd rather not bug Flora about it, but the baseboard heaters just aren't cutting it. I want to try the wood stove, but don't want to burn the place down if the flux
flew. It's not the DeLorean.
Mason laughed at his own Back to the Future joke. And yeah, my uncle's service is his and my dad's every year. I can probably lean on him to swing by and take a look.
Cool.
I'd been careful not to mention my weird roadside conversation with Curtis, not wanting to open myself up to more teasing. I got enough of that as it was. And sure enough, Adam had another crack coming.
Are we all set for Leather Night?
I'm seriously worried about Logan, though. Maybe we need a leash or code word in case some big biker dude tries to escape with him.
Logan can handle himself, and I'll be busy in the kitchen, not looking for a hookup.
I'm just saying, Angel Face, I worry about you. You're probably a Dom's wet dream. Not that I get that. How do you look at someone and think, I'd like to leave bruises on that? Who does that?
Me. All the time.
Kinky people, of which you are not one. I rolled my eyes. And you're just mad that you're not likely to score a bake cookies and drink milk vanilla hookup at this thing.
No hookups from either of you.
Mason glared at us. We don't hit on customers, remember?
Yes, boss.
Adam rolled his eyes on his way to the stockroom. Mason left to go make the specials board, and then I was alone with my prep until Horatio came in shortly before the lunch crowd. At least I hoped there was a crowd. Even a moderate one would be a vast improvement over the last few weeks. Unlike some chef friends, I loved prep work. Getting everything diced, chopped, grated, and arranged in separate containers soothed the restless thrum in my chest. Lunch was slow but steady until around 1:30 when Mason popped his head in.
My boyfriend is in.
With Curtis.
And apparently they want to talk to you.
Me? What did I do?
I don't know, but I'll take over here for you while you go see.
Mason made a shooing motion with his hand.
Afternoon.
I said as I approached the duo. They had their usual table, Flint in his uniform, Curtis in a flannel shirt that had seen better decades. And damn if my eyes didn't go to Curtis first. Forget uniform porn. That did nothing for me. Apparently, my traitorous body had developed a thing for bearded and broody. Mason said you wanted me.
Yep. Mace said you're cold at the rental.
Flint looked at me critically. He always reminded me of my old geometry teacher in high school, like he could see all my shortcomings and found me lacking.
You should have spoken up sooner.
It's okay, I shrugged. He told me his uncle
is not who I'd use.
Flint shook his head. His dislike of Mason's family was legendary.
Arnie Fletcher does chimney sweep work for heaters and fireplaces and stoves. He'll be around tomorrow. And Curtis made a call about the wood.
Something told me that Mason had leaned hard on Nash, who had, in turn, put a boot in Curtis's ass, but Curtis nodded. He held out a scrap of paper where he'd written a name, phone number, and a hefty sum. His handwriting was blocky, like he had to try hard to stay neat.
That's for a cord. Split and ready for the stove. Cash. Probably be enough to see you through the rest of the winter, since you're not home that much, and you've got other heat, too. But you just want to take the stove for a test drive. You might want to get a quarter cord. That's about a pickup load.
It was the most sentences Curtis had strung together around me, and I liked his voice when he wasn't being a sarcastic ass. He spoke slow, like he'd thought about each word, and his natural speaking voice had a melodic quality that wasn't noticeable when he was cranky. Sounds like what I should do.
I'll get the quarter cord. You got a truck? Johnny doesn't deliver for less than a cord.
And Cranky was back, just like that. Only the bike and my Miata. I could probably borrow Adam's.
Or Curtis could stop being a pain in the rear and take you to get the quarter cord.
Nash gave Curtis a pointed look. Releasing a great sigh, Curtis leaned back in his chair.
Monday. Afternoon. You guys usually slow around then, right?
Right. I honestly wasn't sure I wanted to be alone with Curtis, especially not in a small space like a truck. But I also wasn't about to let that nervousness show. He'd probably like that, me squirming. And I wasn't scared as much as just not sure I wanted a field trip with everyone's favorite cranky lumberjack.
I'll pick you up here at 2. Be ready to work, but we'll be back before your dinner rush.
Curtis looked me up and down like he wasn't quite sure I was capable of work. I'll be ready. And thanks.
No problem. You get the veggie burgers in yet?
Yep, but any chance of tempting you with my special
veggie burger? Lots of onions. Fries. Please.
Nash added for him with a laugh, and clearly I had a problem because I dearly wanted to hear that word from Curtis.
Please. Please.
What would his voice sound like, broken and pleading? Would it keep the melodic quality? Get higher? Lower? Obsessing over that kept me busy back in the kitchen while I made his food. And, yes, I totally snuck a peek after Mason delivered their plates, just to see if Curtis made that blissed-out face again.
He did.
And it only caused me to wonder, since he'd called my food merely all right, what would he do with something utterly divine? And damn if I didn't want to be the guy to find out.
3. Curtis. Nash volunteering me for shit had me in an even worse funk than the one I'd been in since the new year had started. Friday, my whole body was tense, every muscle, every nerve ending, every thought, like it knew I was supposed to be heading to Bill and Tom's and wasn't. I tried hard to remember my manners, though, and sent 2 books the cashier at the kid gift store downtown said were popular. I hadn't always been a cranky bastard. Pessimism seemed to be my default now, the tattered blanket I wrapped myself in when the world met my low expectations.
Saturday I followed my usual custom, even though there was a drizzle going and traffic would likely be light. I woke up early, set up several works in progress at the gas station. I'd had the pumps removed years ago, but the building's past life was still unmistakable. The awning that used to shield the pumps was probably my favorite part of the structure, as it allowed me to ignore the drizzle, lose myself to hours of carving. I found over time that tourists enjoyed watching me do my thing. And me, I didn't much mind an audience. When I was in the right mood, it could be fun showing off, and it often led to sales. Sweat rolled down my back as I worked on a huge eagle. I loved doing birds, loved watching them emerge from a tree trunk all proud and regal. Loved their energy and personality as I put the final details on. The eyes, the ruffled feathers, the right curve of the beak. No tourists stopped, so I spent hours getting the guy right. Eventually my head got a little swimmy. Crap. I'd forgotten to eat. Again. I went around to the makeshift greenhouse I had out back. This time of year, not much wanted to grow. But I had some hearty greens, a few onions. I made myself something approaching a salad and headed for my shower. I'd traded a plumber friend some statues for his help rigging a shower in one of the two bathrooms. I had no patience for a full rehab. Been there, done that with the house. All I needed was a way to get the grime off. So it was a strictly basic affair and I didn't linger. That done, I padded to the storeroom I used as both closet and pantry. I told myself to grab something, anything, but my hands refused to cooperate. Instead, wandering to the back of the closet to my leather. Leather night. That was tonight. I fingered my favorite leather jeans, the ones I would have worn to Bill and Tom's with one of my harnesses under it. In the smell of the leather, so many memories lingered. Troy. Others. Bill. Damn. I wanted to get fucked up. Wanted to be pushed out of my head until the memories were dust. They'd be back, of course. They always were. But a sweet escape. Man, I needed that. And I hated the club scene. Hated. But I disliked those apps even more. And sure, there were people I could call, but like Bill and Tom, they'd all known Troy. And I just couldn't deal with sympathy. Maybe there'd be someone new at this thing. Someone from out of town, possibly. Someone who didn't know Troy, or me, or all my business. If nothing else, maybe I could get my dick sucked. It wouldn't be what I really needed, but I could pretend. So I pulled on my leather pants. Wasn't quite feeling it for a harness, so I went with a vest I loved that laced up the back and sides. Double bicep gauntlets because I wasn't entirely sure what mood I was in other than needing something. Boots needed a quick polish, and I tried hard not to dwell on all the times I'd done this for Troy, taking pride in taking care of his leathers. By 9, I was fed, dressed, and antsy as fuck. I debated whether to drive or walk. It wasn't like I'd be bringing someone back here, and I was intending to drink. How much would be determined by how slim the pickings were. But in the end, I decided to drive. I could always walk back and return for the truck in the morning. The tavern parking lot was as full as I'd seen it in months. Lots more motorcycles and jacked-up trucks than usual. To my surprise, the guys had a bouncer working the door. And damn it, I knew him. Sam Shelburne, longtime friend of Troy's. Big guy who drove a CVO Harley and owned a bike dealership up in Coos Bay. He was an ideal choice for the front door. But still, no one I wanted to talk to.
"Curtis, motherfucker, what are you doing out of the cave?"
He left his stool to give me a hearty backslap.
"Cover's $5, but no worries if you're short."
I've got it. I pulled out a 5, let him stamp my hand like I was a teenager at a rave. Ronnie's inside. You find him, he'll get you your first round.